When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Jeremy and Joe starts now
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
All right, back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, Joe George and Bill Kunkel here with you until 6 o'clock. We'll be joined by the head coach of the University of Houston Cougars football team, Willie Fritz. If you missed it yesterday, highly recommend going back to the podcast from yesterday's show. Tom Herman was a great interview on the show yesterday. Really enjoyed talking to him, getting his thoughts on everything, all the craziness that's happening right now.
What's he doing
in college football? I think he's still at FAU. Technically,
that's what, like an advisor? Is he coaching?
No, he's not coaching.
I think he's being paid to hang out.
Yeah, like he's not.
Was that his stop after Texas?
Oh, it was CBS Sports Network in between.
And
but yeah,
the Bears.
Bears was before FAU?
I think so. Yeah. Bears was 2021.
Is there another profession? I mean, I'm sure there are, but you know, another public profession where you go from, I mean, top of the world in Texas football to nothing, like, and now we don't even know where the hell he is, like almost instantaneously.
No,
like it's crazy.
No, I don't think there's anything that's it's comparable. I mean, the closest I could think would be like certain politicians.
I was gonna say the closest I could think of was Shaka Smart.
Yeah,
Marquette killing it though. Like,
yeah,
he's doing really
it's,
well.
It's not quite the same because he rebounded better than Tom did, but he still was a big drop for him.
Where the hell's Tyrone Willingham? Like, what happened?
Right, no idea. No idea.
And that was quick.
I feel like with coaches in any profession, it's the one where you can just fall off and you're the next big thing or close to being the next big thing, and the next thing you know, you're relevant. Like, I remember during one of the Texans coaching searches, because we had 3 in 3 years, so I don't remember which one it was the most, but like, I think it was D'Amico, where everyone was so interested and so badly wanted Eric Bieniemy. Maybe it was actually probably one of the second one. And he never got a head coaching job, and now he's a running backs coach.
Bro, can we stop with the Bieniemy stuff?
No, but just like
I know,
in
mean you. Yeah. I mean, like, the people that carry that torch.
Oh.
Like, the wherever he's been, the people that left to go somewhere and needed guys to do what he did never brought him along.
Yeah.
And then he goes to UCLA and he's let go. Like, it was a disaster. It's been not good wherever he went. And it's not like the Chiefs couldn't figure it out when he left. It was all Andy Reid.
Yeah. Now, anyway, to defend him about UCLA, that job stinks.
Oh, boy. But boy, did they get better right away when Deshaun Foster left.
It shows sometimes, like, certain guys just aren't great coaches. And that's what's clearly, I mean, no, I know they got rocked by Indiana last weekend.
And but Northwestern.
You're right. You're Cats. Wow. Go Cats.
Like, in football, like in coaching, though, it's such a flavor of the minute. Like, if the hot guy. Remember, Bobby Slowick was one of the top guys up for head coaches after his tenure 2 years ago as the OC. So, I mean, if you strike while it's hot and you cash in, great. But the problem is, if you're not actually very good, you're going to flame out. And then it's going to be like, well, I'm never getting back to that level again.
Yeah, it's just when you flop as a coach, it's hard to build back up unless you're really willing to take. Like, that's why I got to give Tom Herman credit. Obviously, didn't work at FAU, but I don't think he's done coaching just yet. But a lot of times you have to go to the bottom of the barrel of some of these schools. But now with these buyouts, why would you want to do that? Like, why would you want to coach at some low-level school if you got, like Brian Kelly? I'm fascinated to see what kind of job interest Brian Kelly gets going forward. Because not a single person besides, like, I think the backup quarterback is the only one I have seen say a nice thing about Brian Kelly. Nobody, like players, parents, former players, current players, analysts, nobody is saying anything good about Brian Kelly. I'm not shocked because that's what happened at Notre Dame. Like, no one was that upset that Brian Kelly had left the Irish to go to LSU. So, like, if you have that level of reputation, I don't know where he coaches again.
Not only that, but to that point times 10, he kind of mentally – he used LSU as, like, his final thing on his bucket list as a head coach. He didn't use it as a place he wanted to go win, dominate, achieve, grow, become better. He used it as a, all right, I did my thing. And I think it was Andrew Pate. Is that the college?
Oh, Josh Pate.
Josh Pate said that they hired his staff when he was on vacation on the beach. Like, bro, what?
Mm-hmm.
How would you not want – that's the thing about college coaches that drives a lot of people crazy. Like, Matt Rhule loves to have complete autonomy and control of everything in the building, from the pictures on the wall, the carpet on the floor, the parking spots. No joke. When he was the head coach of the Panthers, he tried controlling all of that. Social media posts, what they're putting out there. That's the beauty of college football, and those guys have all that control. If Brian Kelly doesn't even want control of his staff,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't give a damn. So why the hell would you ever hire him to be in charge of a lesser program? He's not going to care at all. If he didn't care about LSU, where the pressure's on for real, he's not going to care about anywhere else.
Yeah, I think he wants to coach again, but I just don't know if his ego would allow him to take a lesser job.
Because I don't think coaching is his passion. I think he's done with it. I think he's just done with it. If you don't have passion to coach at LSU, where the hell would you find passion for coaching unless you're over all the BS and all the CEO stuff and all the politics, which is very possible? Then you just go back to, like, high school and hang and coach there if you really truly have a passion for coaching. I just don't think Brian Kelly really has a passion for it anymore.
Or it could be. I think I agree with most of what you said there, Will, but I leave a small door open for he just being a terrible fit for LSU. I mean, this is a guy from the Boston area. His dad was a lawyer in the Northeast, and he's trying to shoehorn his way into the culture of Southeast Louisiana. Like, I just don't – it's possible that maybe he didn't lose his passion for coaching football. He just was tired of putting up with guys like the governor of Louisiana talking about how he's going to let Donald Trump hire the next coach. He might have just had it up to his, you know, his ears with that, and once he gets into a situation that's more – where he's more of a fit for the culture, then maybe that'll reignite the passion that he has.
Yeah, I think LSU is, like, one of the only actual schools where, like, culture – and, like, understanding what it means to coach at LSU.
Who was,
like,
the coach
really
before him?
It's Ed Orgeron.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you have to understand.
I would actually disagree, because I think if Brian Kelly went in there and was like, listen, I've never had a crawfish in my life. I don't know anything about it. I'm here for it, but let's win some damn football games. Like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
The community's going to love it. They don't care as long as you win. The problem with Brian was that he forced it. He thought that was the way to success.
Say
was to change his persona, change who he is. No one, you can't even do ESPN 97.5, 92.5 radio and pretend to be somebody else.
Yep.
No one's going to like you.
Yep.
You have to be yourself no matter where you are, let alone at LSU, because they're such a different breed. Like, the Cajun culture is not, like, transferable to anywhere in the country. Just be yourself. Do what you were hired to do. Win football games. That's all they want.
Yeah, and it's so different there, though. I mean, we're seeing something that we haven't seen before, I think. Not a single player has decommitted from LSU after Brian Kelly got fired.
They recommitted.
Like, that's insane. Like, that
players
shows,
come back.
Yeah. Like, they're like, none of us are worried about Brian Kelly being out. Like, we want to be a Tiger so bad. We don't even know who the next head coach is going to be. We don't care. Now, we'll see this governor stuff. Like,
you know what's also been interesting? I think I heard Rich Eisen pointed out. It was somebody I was listening to the other day. And he pointed out, like, it's so telling that, like, we've literally heard zero people come to the defense of Brian Kelly. Not only from LSU, but all the other different places he's been with. Like, even guys like Andrew Whitworth, who didn't actually play for him. He's just, you know, part of the LSU family. Like, no one has a single good thing to say about Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
And by the way, Les Miles from Ohio, Nick Saban bounced around the country. He's from West Virginia.
Sure.
Like, those guys, all they did was win. They didn't try to fit in and be someone they weren't.
Winning covers up everything. 100%.
Yeah,
right?
It's a perfect storm of both.
You're hired not to be a mouthpiece of society, of the culture. You're hired to let them see winning football. Like, that's all your job is.
Yeah.
Not to be one of them, just to give them pride.
But I do think if you're also a D-bag, then...
Yeah, he's unlikable as hell.
Like, you're not going to get the grace that other people are going to get when you're just unlikable. That's when it says,
'cause it's not genuine.
Yeah, you're not a fit here. We've known it since the moment, and we saw the athletic director get fired as well. All right,
can I say one more thing on this? Like, the videos he made, remember when he was at LSU dancing, and I believe he did some stuff at Notre Dame like that. It was one of those things when you have someone telling you what to do as a politician, like Chuck Schumer flipping burgers that are raw. It's like, bro, if you don't know how to grill, just don't grill in the picture, man. Do something different. If you're not a dancer and it's not who you are, don't do that. If you don't talk like that, Brian, don't talk like
that. You know who does know how to grill up some burgers?
Cal.
Go Texas.
Damn right.
Cal. He's definitely a grill master. Grill some burgers. For sure.
He can grill some burgers.
He's a grill guy.
All right, we're going to go to break here. When we get back, let's get back into Cal McNair's Houston Texans, because the deadline is Tuesday. Are the Texans going to make any moves? We'll discuss that next.
You know who also could cook up some burgers? That's right. It's Burger Chan. Look, Cal may cook up a mean burger. He may do it really well, but I guarantee you one thing. He doesn't do it as good as Burger Chan. And that's the thing. Look, we live in one of the best food cities in all of America. There's a great burger place damn near on every corner, but Burger Chan stands out above them all. But you don't even have to just take my word for it, because they've got the awards to prove it. They got the hardware to back up that claim. In 2023 and 2024, Burger Chan was ranked number in the Yelp's best 100 restaurants in the country. That's not just best burger places. That's not just best places in Houston, but in Yelp's best 100 restaurants in the entire country. That's where Burger Chan found themselves in 2023 and 2024, and they haven't missed a step. They're going to be on that list again for 2025. And when you get that great burger, I think, to me, that only enhances the football-watching experience, right? Football season's here. I know when I'm watching a game, whether it be, I don't know, Texas and Vandy this week. You got OU going to Tennessee. Maybe it's the Texans and Broncos on Sunday. Regardless of which game you're watching, the experience of watching that game, so much better when you get a tasty burger from Burger Chan, maybe some fries or some curly fries as well to go along with that. And make sure you stop by on Mondays, because on Mondays, if the Texans win on Sunday, you will be able to get a free side with your entree if you mention ESPN 97.5, my name, or just say Go Texans, because they're partnering with us, Burger Chan, through the rest of the football season on Victory Mondays. And regardless of when you want to stop by, they've got more hours. So that's a good thing, right? Like, they used to be closed on Mondays. No longer. You can go by and get lunch on Mondays, Victory Mondays in particular, when the Texans win. They used to be closed at 3 every day. Now they're open until 9, Wednesday through Saturday, for dinner service. So extended hours for you to go out and try the best burgers in town, great fish sandwiches, chicken sandwiches, hot dogs, falafel, and breakfast sandwiches as well. And again, make sure you stop by on Mondays in particular to get yours, because they're partnering with us for big wins this football season on Victory Monday. Had to mention that again. I want you guys to go by on Monday when the Texans beat the Broncos and get your free side when you mention my name, ESPN 97.5, or just say Go Texans, a free side with your entree. Burger Chan, best burgers in the city. Find them at 5353 West Alabama, and see their full menu at BurgerChanHTX.com.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 in HD, 97.9 HD2. You're listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
YouTube TV customers, get the sports you love on ESPN back. It's Friday. That means tomorrow's college football is on. If you want games on ESPN, you got to do this right now. including college football, college game day, Monday Night Football, NBA, college basketball, and more. Act now. Go to keepmynetworks.com to get ESPN back. All right, we just got Will and Brian, the official Friday injury report for the Houston Texans. It's pretty good. Jalen Petrie, Nico Collins, Christian Kirk, Braxton Berrios, Woody Marks, none of them even have an injury designation, so they are all good to go for the game this weekend. The only two players, I would say, of consequence that are both listed as questionable are going to be Dalton Schultz and DeNico Autry. So that's pretty good, Will.
Yeah, it's great. This team never, you know, this is a blessing and a curse type of situation where we are with this team, is they've lost some games they shouldn't have lost to, or lost some games they shouldn't have lost. They were never banged up. Like, this team has been healthy all year long, and they've played some very banged up teams. Whereas on the other side, the Broncos, Nate Atkins, PJ Lack, Marvin Sims Jr., and Patrick Surtain are all out this week. And then Alex Forsyth has limited participation. So you're seeing another, by the way, Dre Greenlaw was one to keep an eye on. He is full participation. You've run into some banged up teams, and you've been healthy all year, and you're still an under 500 team, which is another, you know, like, who is this team? Who are the Texans? Are they a legit competitor when it comes to the playoffs? Mm-hmm. And they're going to get injuries. Like, injuries are going to hit this team as they hit every single team across the NFL. And that's what makes me nervous, is that they didn't build any sort of cushion into their schedule when they do get those injuries.
Yeah, I mean, you're very much like in the same situation as the Baltimore Ravens right now. Like you're
except their division sucks.
Yeah, their division sucks. Yours doesn't. Like your margin for error is very limited. And, you know, if you're going to – now, Tuesday is the next big day, I would say, in the NFL. We got the deadline coming up here on Tuesday. We'll – you know, it's been pretty active so far. We saw John Metchie get traded again this last week, this time to the New York Jets from the Philadelphia Eagles.
That guy.
That's mean, Brian. That's come on, man. That's so – we all like John.
How do you have that ready so quickly? Oh, he's got – damn.
Got quick hands.
You've been on the drops today, for sure.
So we'll wait and see how active it is. I mean, it sounds like there's going to be some big names that could be moved. I mean, we saw another Bengals player, one of their other defensive tackles, request a trade yesterday. Trey Hendrickson's name has come up quite a bit. But the Houston Texans, this ESPN article, and we'll get to Marcus here in a second, they suggest three players for the Texans that could be on the move, or at least the three players that they recommend the Texans to trade. Okay, Will? Number one, Trent Brown. That makes a lot of sense. Like, late-round pick swap, someone that's desperate for offensive line help.
Like the Texans?
Well, he's clearly not going to play
here.
No,
100%.
You're good at left tackle.
You know, I saw him in the locker room the other day just chilling on the floor, hanging out by his locker on the floor.
Like, no disrespect to Trent Brown, but if he can't play for the Texans,
where can he play?
Yeah,
that's like, kind of
what are the teams going to like jump in to come get him?
Like, you would need like a big injury this weekend, and someone's very desperate.
someone really desperate.
Yeah. Now the problem is if you move him, you know, Blake Fisher is your left tackle if Arianza Arisery gets hurt.
That's not ideal.
I would rather keep Trent Brown here as a break glass in case of emergency kind of a guy, because they clearly don't like Blake Fisher, and except for the sixth offensive lineman.
Especially if it's going to be like a 6-7 swap, I'd rather just hold on to the guy.
The next player that they said was a notable trade candidate from ESPN, Dameon Pierce.
I think that's a great one because I don't – even if someone goes down, he's not getting snaps. He's not getting reps. The kick return, like, you're going to hold on to him for that?
Yeah, you can put someone else back there. They've been shuffling guys in and out the last 3 weeks.
Is he fourth on the depth chart?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's behind Dari.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would have the same question, like, who's really going to come get him? But if someone wants him, that's fine. I'd let him go.
Here's what I'll say on that. The NFL is notorious for coaches that say, I can unlock him. I can get him. Like, we've seen Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, quarterbacks all the time that get another chance somewhere because they were drafted high, there was potential, there was something that a coach sees, and their ego says, I'm the one that can do it.
I agree with you, but to me, there's a difference between a first-round quarterback and a fourth-round running back.
But a guy that rushed for 1,000 yards in the league, like, he's actually did it in the league.
I don't want to nitpick, but it wasn't 1,000 yards. But I get your point.
What was it?
It was like nine. He should have.
That's a nitpick.
I don't want to nitpick.
I said it with a nine, Brian.
I said it up front.
You lied.
He would have hit 1,000 yards, but he missed like four games to close the year.
Oh, B-Mac. That's the biggest
939. See, I don't want to nitpick.
Put me on Chucky of the day.
You're that dude in class. Actually, it was 9:39.
I don't know why I couldn't let that one go. And
the last one here before we get to the phones that they said as a notable trade candidate, which is interesting because we just said his name on the injury report, is DeNico Autry is someone they recommend. That look, this is a guy who signed a 2-year, $20 million deal for the Texans in free agency. He missed the first 6 games last year because of suspension, and then he's missed a bunch of games this year because of injury, but he's produced pretty well out there. I would not want to trade DeNico Autry because I like him as a player, but that's one that if he was, of these 3 guys, he would be the one you would probably get the best offer for. Don't think it's still a lot. I think you could potentially get the most.
Definitely the most.
For him, if you wanted to move him.
It's probably still only like a 5th-round pick.
Yeah. But maybe instead of a 5th, a 6th,
you might not have to swap. You might just get a 5th outright.
Yeah, instead of doing like a 6th and 7th swap, maybe it's a 5th and a 6th swap, or you just get him straight up for a 5th-rounder. Like, I'd be fine with that. I'm not hell-bent on keeping DeNico Autry. So, honestly, I think it's just going to be – I think it's going to be quiet for the Texans. I don't expect much, like – I think Damian Pierce does make sense for teams if there's a major injury at a running back spot this weekend and someone's looking to find something on the super cheap. But I wouldn't really anticipate the Texans doing anything on Tuesday.
I like Autry. I would like to see, and I can't find it, his snap count from the interior versus the exterior. Like, is he getting it on the outside or the interior? Because they need everybody that they can get on that interior. And he can provide some push. You would think.
Really been good on special teams, blocking field goals.
Yeah, and that's no small thing.
That's actually why I think
he kept him in the Seattle game. He had no business being in that game.
Like, that could make him one of the reasons why people might want him is because of what he's been doing on special teams. Like, that alone might be a reason. So I think it's gonna be pretty quiet. I mean, I don't really want the Texans to buy heavy in draft capital. I mean, I think the Breece Hall stuff's been a little overblown.
I just don't see. I don't see the point of the Breece. I don't think Breece Hall's that great. I mean, he's serviceable. He's a starting running back. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. But do we not think Woody Marks and Nick Chubb are serviceable together as a tandem in order to give something up? And then where do you put Woody Marks and Nick Chubb? They're not useless. They're not bad.
Well, Woody Marks is your other running back, and Nick Chubb is just a non-factor.
Right. So, and I don't – like, are you willing to give somebody up to get the Breece Hall for Nick Chubb? I just don't know. It seems like a lot to give up potentially.
Yeah, I'm
– I'd give up a 5.
Yes, for sure. I just – kind of like the Achane conversation from yesterday, like I would just want to – I'd want to secure him for next year, and I feel like you're going to pay more if you pay him now than you would in free agency. So, like, if you're really dreaming of Breece Hall and Nick Caserio, just wait it out, man.
And another thing,
wait a couple months.
The way you would ideally use Breece Hall is on the outside, the screen game, pass catching, and that's how you should use Woody Marks. And Nick Haley hasn't really used Woody Marks a whole lot in that world, and they're starting to get to use him a little bit more. So maybe you already got your guy. You got your Breece Hall and Woody Marks in the way you want to use them. And I think they use Nick Chubb and Woody Marks nicely together from a hot hand standpoint, but then also use Nick Chubb inside the tackles, just a little bit outside the tackles, as a physical runner, downhill runner, move the pile guy, and then go to Woody Marks on the edges and on the outside passing game. And to Nick's credit, he's done a really nice job receiving the ball this year, even though he has not done that historically well or even been asked to do it very well when he was with the Browns. So I think you got your running back room. It's not what you want. You want Joe Mixon. You're not going to get him. So here we are. I think it's better you hold on to what you got versus give up anything.
All right, let's go to the HRMP listener line, talk Texans trade deadline with Marcus. Marcus, what's going on, man?
What's up, fellas? I wanted to ask you guys, I want to say it's like a week ago you guys said trading Danielle Hunter. And if we win this weekend and get to 500, does that change your guys' opinion about if they should be heavy buyers or heavy sellers versus if we lose this weekend? And I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Thanks, Marcus. Yeah, I said I was open to the idea of trading Hunter.
Boom.
Well, I think when we had that
conversation. I mean, if they're out of it.
Yeah, that conversation was before the 49ers game. So
I don't like it.
I think winning the 49ers game, I think, changes it because I did not expect them to win the 49ers game or this game, frankly. So now that you have a chance to get back to 500, I would not do it at this point in the season. Now, if you got offered a Godfather offer, maybe you reconsider and you use the DeNico Autry on the outside instead of Daniil, but I think at this point I'd say no.
Let's say they lose on Sunday and they get offered a second.
Yeah, I'm taking that.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, like I would take a second.
If it's a second or better and they lose, then I'm in. Yep. If they win or it's less than that, I'm out.
I hate it. I get it, and I'm not like super anti it, but here's the thing. Daniil Hunter and Will Anderson are who you are on defense. You are elite pass rushing, get to the quarterback, built up front guys. If you trade Daniil Hunter and get a second, you're not getting that guy back. Like, you're not replacing him. So now who's your identity on offense or on defense? So now you're going to have to revamp a big-time guy and figure out who you are defensively and how to replace it, and you don't replace that.
Yeah, I do think, though, that for, like, the long term, like we're going to be talking about replacing Daniil Hunter pretty quickly here.
Eventually,
anyways.
But I think that window's still open next year, despite how this has gone, because the problem isn't on defense. So you're not really trying to fix anything on defense. If anything, you really want to hold on to most of what you have defensively and then kind of build through the guys that you're going to lose. And then, you know, your young guys offensively, that's where we got to fix some stuff. So I don't think getting rid of Daniil Hunter fixes anything. It just makes your problems more and on each side of the ball.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. So I don't really think this weekend will change too much for the Texans, win or lose. I expect it to be pretty status quo on Tuesday when I think the deadline's going to happen. I think it's like right as the show starts or an hour.
4 p.m. Eastern deadline, right?
Oh, I think so. So it'll be literally right as our show starts. All right.
But to answer his question about the Seahawks or the Broncos game, to become stronger buyers or sellers, I don't – like, to your point, I agree with you. I don't think they become strong buyers or sellers one way or the other. But hypothetically, just to kind of answer the question, strong buyers. Like, at least from the standpoint of they're in position to – They're seriously in the run. They're seriously ready to make a push towards the playoffs, maybe get some luck, still win the AFC South. Like, who are we all believing the Colts are for good, for real, the long term? I mean, I kind of think they are, but
for this year, I think they are.
Yeah, they're still like, they win tomorrow or on Sunday, the Texans are a legitimate playoff contender down the stretch.
Yeah, I think if anything, like at this point, they are just a... They're a really good regular season team for this season. I don't know what they're going to do in the playoffs, the Colts, but like you're not winning that division this year unless Daniel Jones gets hurt, I think, at this point.
Or Jonathan Taylor. Like, things can happen.
Yeah, but it's going to be – they're going to have to collapse more than the Texans are going to have to just gain on them. All right, we'll take our break here when we get back. Let's talk some Astros. 10 players likely to be traded this offseason. We'll get to that next, and then at 4:50, we'll be joined by the head coach of the Houston Cougars, Willie Fritz. It's coming up next here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. YouTube TV customers, get the sports you love on ESPN back, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, and more. Act now. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. Back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George, Will Kunkel here with you until 6 o'clock. We'll be joined by Willie Fritz in about 15 minutes from now. But before we do that, Will, The Athletic put out an article about a week ago. Jim Bowden is the 10 MLB stars most likely to be traded this offseason. So we're going to do a little dreaming and wishing for the Houston Astros right now. This first player on the list, well, the player we'll discuss here in a second. Reportedly, John Heyman from the New York Post. Now, I know not everyone loves John Heyman. Some people think he's a little inaccurate at times. I'm with them. Where he's like, he's not always on the money.
He did think the Giants signed Aaron Judge.
He did. And he reported yesterday that the original offer the Detroit Tigers gave Tariq Skubal was below $80 million total for 4 years.
What?
Which is $170 million less than what the Boston Red Sox gave Garrett Crochet.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
Do you think that's real? I don't understand how that can happen.
Another reporter said from Detroit that the original offer was under $100 million.
Oh, my gosh.
So they lowballed the best pitcher in baseball like crazy.
What's the goal with that? To piss them off as much as humanly possible?
it shows they have no money. I don't know. Like, how? Just trade him at that point. So he ends up, he's the number one player on this list. I can't believe that's the offer the Tigers would give. It explains why Alex Bregman was never really in consideration for the Tigers last year. I don't know why AJ Hinch would want to work there, frankly, if that's like the organization that you're working for and they're not at least making a competitive offer to the best pitcher in baseball. But he shows up number one on this list. I think we can all agree that he's going to be way out of reach for the Houston Astros.
You'd have a better chance of bringing Framber Valdez back than Tarik Skubal.
Yeah. Freddie Peralta, the number two star player most likely to be traded this offseason. That to me is my, that's my dream. That's the one for me, because I think you can get him. Like, the Brewers identify players that they like, that they're willing to take a risk on. We've seen them do this multiple times. Like, they're very much the Tampa Bay model, like, where they move on from players before they pay them. Everyone hates it. Everyone cries about it. And then they're one of the best teams in baseball, seems like, every single year. Or at least they're highly competitive in their division every single year. They don't pay guys, but they move on. Like, that's the one where I would... And Jim Bowden mentions the Astros in this conversation as the team, as part of the group of teams that would be likely to inquire about him.
And you're losing all that Jose Abreu money, so now your payroll drops significantly.
And Montero,
yeah, Rafael Montero gone as well. So yeah, you get a lot of money to play with, and they can't miss. That's the thing with this team right now. They're in a position where they need an ace. Mm-hmm. Hunter Brown's their ace. But they need that number two guy. That's why I always thought that if they got in the playoffs, they would be dangerous because they had a 1-2.
And I will say, like, they need an ace because Hunter Brown's
going to be. You don't
think so? Well, he's going to be a free agent before we know it. He's not going to be here. It's like, that's why, to me, this offseason is so interesting for the Astros, because it's not just about today. It's about the next day as well. I mean, the next season as well. You have to replace not just Framber this year, but you have to well position yourself for when Hunter Brown's contract is up and you don't bring him back.
Yeah, he's up for arbitration in 2026.
So he's gone 27, I guess.
Yeah.
So
That's why I think in part Dana Brown understands Jim Crane and how the way he operates, and that's why he signs guys really young when you can. And I think that the signings that he made with I guess he didn't make the signing with Lance McCullers Jr., but that was, I mean, that was a good signing at the time. The signing on Cam Smith and getting him in there and running him out there and getting him under contract as long as you can. Like, that's when Dana Brown's really good with that stuff. That, I mean, you're gonna lose Jeremy Pena. You're going to lose Jeremy Pena, and you're going to lose Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot to.
It's a lot.
That's a lot to have to figure out. And as much as we say that the Triple A's and their minor leagues isn't very deep. It's not very deep. I know they come up and they perform, but it's in short periods, in short bursts. It's small sample size stuff. Those aren't guys that can come up and play 162. God bless them for what they did this year to keep the Astros in it. I mean, Dana Brown and that scouting department have a lot of work to do, and that's why that Kyle Tucker trade was so necessary. And if they didn't have that, God forbid they didn't have that. I don't know where they would be come down in the future.
Yeah, it's going to put them – they're in an interesting spot because, like, any of these other names on here, two names that came up with Jeremy that Jeremy said a little birdie whispered in his ear about the Astros being interested in trading for these players. I'm curious your thoughts. Mackenzie Gore and Sandy Alcantara.
The Sandy Alcantara one is so interesting because you know it's in there. And if he gets out of an organization that doesn't give a damn about winning, and who knows, you know, I don't know what he's like off the field, but you don't have to worry about the Miami hangouts and the Miami hangover. You come to Houston, and Houston has a way of just any pitcher. Yusei Kikuchi walks in that door, and he's fantastic. They make guys better. Their pitching staff and their organization makes it work. And Alcantara is the guy that you can buy low. And maybe you hit it and, like, let's go.
Yeah, I think he's, to me, I mean, him and Mackenzie Gore are both really good options for the Houston Astros. And it's all pitchers so far. Coming at number eight on this list is a name that I think Jeremy and I have discussed at length on Inside the Icebox. We're doing the Astros podcast. Brandon Lowe, second baseman, Tampa Bay Rays.
They've got to figure out second base.
That, to me, is really interesting because they don't have one. You can put Altuve there. Like, as you're currently...
We moved him to left for a reason.
I know. But, like, if you're going to add a lefty bat, it's basically Lowe, or it's go acquire an outfielder, or leave Jesus Sanchez out there thus putting Jose Altuve back at second base. Because I think we're all under the assumption that Yordan Alvarez is primarily going to be the DH next season. Now, maybe they surprise us. Maybe Altuve is your DH, and Yordan's primarily in left field. I think that would be a mistake, frankly. Like, I would rather have Altuve in left just because how fragile Yordan is. But Brandon Lowe would be really interesting. The hard part with that one is that, like, your infield's already crowded, Will.
You got to figure, we got to have a real discussion about Jose Altuve at some point as well, because he had his worst year of his career this season for whatever the reason might be. Maybe the fact that he's getting old, he's been in the league for 15 years, he's 35 years old. Do you still build around him, or do you platoon him as much as possible to make him, you know, to give him that chance of being good when he is out there? But you got to figure out second base. That became a massive hole this year because who's the guy that they brought in?
Ramon Urias.
No, yeah, well, him too on the trade deadline, but even Brandon's. They brought him in the offseason. He never played. He never did anything.
Yeah, from the Rockies.
So, like, a complete whiff on that. Now, you are good on your left side. You have Isak Paredes playing.
Well, Correa's at third now.
Well, right. So Correa's at third.
Can short.
Paredes go to second? Do you bring Cam Smith in from the outfield? Although he was phenomenal.
Yeah,
I
think Cam stays in right permanently at this point. I mean, the Paredes part's interesting. Like, I think he could play second base. I don't think that's...
Would Correa want to play second?
I don't think so. Because, like, he doesn't really want to play shortstop. So, I think Paredes is likely your second baseman unless you move him or Christian Walker. Like, you could teach Paredes.
You mean from a trade standpoint?
Yeah, yeah.
You're not getting much for Christian after the year he had, sadly.
No, it's a salary.
You can get a whole bunch for Paredes. Here's the thing, though. His swing is just perfect for here.
I would not want to.
If you can get something for him, though.
It could help your rotation. Like, you talk about these big-name trades. Like, that's a player that, like with, like, Freddie Peralta, you call Milwaukee. Like, they might be interested in him and say, okay, that gives us a legit piece that's cheap, under control, that we can roll out there and play multiple positions. You know, I don't think, like, you have to move him, but he probably is the player most likely to be moved that you can get an asset in return for. Like, I don't really think the Astros will be taking calls on Myers. I don't think they're gonna move Pena or Hunter Brown.
McCormick will likely get moved, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They just don't value him.
Honestly, I think he just might get non-tendered. Like, I'm not really. I don't expect.
There's interest. I know there was a whole bunch of interest from sources last offseason, and then there was some interest at the trade deadline too. I just think they couldn't get rid of him because he was a valuable piece. God forbid someone went down. Like, he's certainly a serviceable Major League Baseball outfielder to a team. It's a matter of where it fits in and where it works. I think he's better elsewhere just so he can be valued.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, like, I never would have thought that we'd be watching the World Series and seeing Miles Straw taking meaningful at-bats and innings playing for the Toronto Blue Jays, which you can hear that game tonight right here on ESPN 97.5. And hopefully George Springer will be back in the lineup and winning another World Series to take down
the Los Angeles Dodgers.
It's been fun. All right, let's take a break here when we get back. Willie Fritz, he joins us. Big game this weekend for the Cougs. They're now back in the top 25 for the first time in a couple seasons. We'll get to that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Next weekend, we will be back out at LaBerge in Lake Charles. Check out their new VIP fan cave sections. They're really cool. You get the nice chairs set up. You got multiple TVs. You got four of them. And you can choose how you want to use them. You can put one game on the four TVs to make one giant screen, or you can split it up. So if you're there during a Sunday and there's a good slate of games, or on Saturday while you're waiting for your favorite team to start, you can pick all those. They got new menu items on the menu with also more coming. The area to eat now is also available to all ages, so you can go out and hang out with your family. It's really the only area at LaBerge you couldn't do that before, so now that changes as well. Great place to watch the UFC fights. You can earn rewards on every wager right now when you use your Penn Play card. It's free to sign up for. You just go in there, sign up for it. You get plenty of great perks. And they also offer you a chance to place wagers on all of the Houston area teams. Must be 21 to bet. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
ESPN 97.5.
YouTube TV customers, get the sports you love on ESPN back, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, and more. Act now. Go to keepmynetworks.com to get ESPN back. Don't got to worry about that this weekend, though, when you watch the Cougs take on West Virginia. You'll be able to watch it wherever you can. Right now, head coach Willie Fritz joins myself, Joe George, and Will Kunkel here on the show. Coach, how you doing today?
Good. How y'all doing?
Doing good. Big game this weekend for a lot of reasons. Back in the top 25, but also this weekend, it's the Heroes game honoring military and first responders, but also a blackout game in the honor of Coach Hester, who lost his battle with cancer last week. So I do want to start there. You know, we've been talking about that all week, but having the chance to talk to you, I'd love just to hear, you know, your thoughts on Coach Hester and what he meant to the program for you.
Well, just a fantastic person. You know, I've been with him for a while, and he's really my first hire here at the University of Houston. The strength coach is really critical to your success and helping you establish a culture. And the kids just thought the world of him, and you know, he's diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in February. And just, I think they gave him 4 weeks initially, and he just kept fighting and scratching and clawing. And unfortunately, he's not with us. He passed away last Saturday, right? A few hours before we played Arizona State. But we're excited about honoring him. He's really a unique individual and did so much for our program.
Coach Willie Fritz, Will Kunkel here. You got to deal with something that a lot of kids on this roster and a lot of people around the program have never had to deal with: expectations and rat poison. 7-1, 22 in the country. How do you handle that? What do you say to your kids to not buy what we're saying here on ESPN Radio and how good you guys are this year?
Well, we just talk about trying to improve on a daily basis. I know it sounds corny, but he's talking about going 1-0 every day and working as hard as we possibly can. And, you see a little bit of improvement. You do that every single day, stack good days on top of each other. You're going to get better. And that's something that we've told our guys we've got to focus and concentrate on. We can't hear all the outside noise, all those kind of different things. You just want to keep improving offensively, defensively, kicking game, technique, fundamentally, schematically, whatever it might be, doing a better job in meetings. Our walkthroughs a little while ago, I thought our kids did a great job heading over to the hotel. We'll have some meetings over there at the hotel. They'll do a good job in there as well. And then go out and you play your tail off. So we're looking forward to seeing how much we improve this week.
You don't have to name names, but have you caught anyone kind of feeling themselves a little extra this week?
No. I'm pretty smart about not doing that around me. coaches, players, everybody. But, the big deal about getting better is just consistently, giving the same message and, having the same work ethic day after day after day after day. And I tell guys, not very many people can do that. They slack off, someplace along the way. And, if you want to be elite, that's what you have to do every single day. And that's why there's not a whole lot of elite people or elite teams. They just can't do it day after day. So that's something we want to accomplish.
Coach, you just kind of win wherever you go. It's impressive to see these programs and how you just continually to win and getting the Cougs back into the top 25 this year, in the thick of it for, the Big 12. What's the secret sauce that you can share with us? And you're not going to tell us all your secrets, but how do you turn around a program so quickly? Like, what goes into it for you?
Well, you got to have a good staff. You got to have good student athletes. You got to have good people in your program. They're more inclined to listen and do things the way you like for them to do it, and gives them a better chance to be elite. And then that consistency, I tweak things, daily, weekly, yearly, on how I do things, but not too much. I've been doing this a couple of years, and there's a way that works for me. It might not work for somebody else, but it works for me, and that's how we do it. And if I get the coaches to buy in and players to buy in, then we got a chance to be successful.
When you got here, Coach, I remember us talking to you on the wall after your introductory press conference and saying, with the transfer portal, success is demanded right away from the fan base and probably from the board as well. This is the first time you've dealt with the transfer portal at a school for several, consistent years in a row. Is it harder to build a program? Is it easier? Because you also got to hold on to those guys as well. How have you utilized it and how's it treated you guys?
Well, you know, we'll find out, you know, after the season and all those kind of different things. But, you know, the advantage I had this last cycle compared to when I first got here is that I was here for the whole duration of recruiting. And when I got here initially, I didn't realize, you know, I didn't really take over for a week and a half. You know, my previous school were probably in the conference championship, and I got here, they had all sorts of things. And then the University of Houston is out of school. You know, they were, and so I, in my first team meeting, I had about 30 guys in there. You know, so it's, it allowed us, you know, having a full calendar to recruit, to really do a good job of, you know, background checking and gathering information on guys that you're bringing into your program. And, you know, not just grabbing a guy because it fills a need. You know, you grab a guy because he fills a need and he's going to be a great addition culturally, you know, to your program.
I mean, the transfer portal got you your quarterback, and he's played really well this year. I'm curious how you evaluate, you know, Connor Wigman's performance and just what you've seen from him, you know, and going up into this game versus West Virginia.
Yeah, I'm really proud of Connor. He's, you know, again, a really nice young man, and we'll get our background checking on him. And, you know, he's been a great addition on the field, off the field, everything. You know, I think it's he's feeling more and more comfortable in our offense. You know, one of the things that I think people give him enough credit for, this is the fourth different system he's been in, you know, I believe in the last 4 years, you know, high school and a couple different coordinators at his last stop. And, you know, now he's, you know, really figuring out what we're doing here. Because football's complicated nowadays. And, you know, luckily he's a really smart guy and he's able to grasp everything that we're putting in front of him.
Coach Willie Fritz joining us here of your Houston Cougars taking on West Virginia this Saturday on FS1 if you can't get out to the game. But, Coach, you guys are 13.5-point favorites. The over-under is 48.5. I know you addressed that with your team. The spread is very important. But seriously, how do you address gambling? Because it's now in the forefront. It's in their face all the time.
You know, our compliance people talk to them about it. You know, we talked to him about it a lot at the beginning of the season. You know, just how important it is. You know, somebody may be asking you a question. You got to really listen to it. I've had people ask me questions before, and I hang up, and I'm like, shoot, I think that guy's got something else going on, man. You know, so, you know, you got to be very aware of it. You know, you're hearing all this stuff with the NBA, and you know, it'd be a shame to ruin your career as a coach or a manager or a trainer or a player, you know, because you goofed up, you know, doing all those kind of things. So our guys are very aware of it. And obviously we don't talk about, you know, getting into the numbers and all those kind of different things, but we do address it at the beginning of the season and we'll talk about it in the off season as well.
Coach, we had Tom Herman on the show yesterday. You guys are honoring the 2015 Peach Bowl team this weekend as well. You mentioned you guys had some conversations. You know, I mean, Coach coming back, Tom Herman coming back is something I don't think a lot of people thought we'd see for a while. So I'm just curious, you know, what your conversations have been like with him and, you know, your relationship with him as well.
He just left a little while ago. He was up here and I showed him around our new facilities. I've known Tom for a long time.
Was he jealous?
Job. What's that?
Was he jealous of the new facilities?
You know, he had a lot to do with that indoor facility, which I think is the best indoor in the country. And because it's a new football operations center that I think second to none. And, you know, so, yeah, we've known each other a long time. Many years ago, you know, he coached the same Houston State for Coach Randleman. And you know, I'd coached there as well. And so that's kind of where we started our relationship. But, you know, he and his team were really going to be neat to honor those guys. Matter of fact, they're having a reception here. In a little bit, I'm going to go over there and see some of the guys. And some of the guys I know really well off that team. Greg Ward is around all the time. Tyus Bowser around all the time. You know, those guys have been very successful, you know, not just in football, but, you know, in their business life or whatever they've gotten into. And, you know, that seems to be a common denominator of successful teams and people.
Coach, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you joining me when Jeremy Branham's not here with us, because I know you guys, you spend enough time with Jeremy during the week. So thanks for joining us.
Jeremy does a fantastic job.
You don't have to. No. We don't do that here. Jeremy, no.
Well, thank you for joining us, and best of luck this weekend, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Thank y'all. Go Cougs.
All right, go Cougs. It is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Will Conkle, Joe George here with you. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back here on 97.5 and 92.5. YouTube TV customers, get the sports you love on ESPN back, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, and more. Act now. Go to keepmynetworks.com to get ESPN back.